Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen at Studio A, and over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Mr. Allen. Yes. We have quite a program, so we probably want to get to our callers. We have quite a program this morning. We are breaking some news stories, both out of Minneapolis and out of St. Louis, Missouri. And then, of course, we are breaking the story with regards to allegations, Mr. Allen, that you and I conspired with a person to disrupt and embarrass the current African-American chief of police, which I'm stunned by that. I don't know how those folks even came close to that, you know what I'm saying? But that we had been in consultation with the individual. I understand that she is with us, and there'll be some real clarity. So go ahead, Mr. Allen,
we got some real clarity going on. I know, and we just want to give our listeners some history. On last week, we had a friend of the show, Mr. Jamar Nelson, call in and talked about a meeting but did not give the specifics, so Mr. Edwards and I had no idea about this meeting, the location of the meeting, and even the topic of the meeting. And so, you know, the meeting happens, and the next morning, social media is ablaze, and people are attacking myself and Mr. Edwards and saying that we sent our guest, I'm getting ready to introduce, to this meeting to disrupt it. With that said, I'd like to welcome Ms. Lisa Marie from Mothers is her organization, based out of North Minneapolis, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for Don for having me in that intro.
So. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And, let me just say this very quickly. We need to clear up that static. We're getting a little too much static, and we don't want to miss any part of today's program. Could you clean that static up a little bit? I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, that would be on Lisa Marie's end. We talked about that earlier because we're getting.
Are you able to hear me clear now?
Yes.
We can hear
you. Can you hear me now? Or is it static?
That's way better. That's without the static. So, Ms. Dean, you know, last week I understand that you attended a meeting and. And can you tell us where it was at, the participants in the room, and kind of give us a encapsulated summary of what went down from your observation of someone that was at the movie? And I'm sure Mr. Edwards and I both will jump in with questions. But go ahead, tell us about this meeting and how you were attracted to it.
Well, first I want to say thank you for the intro. And one thing I wanted to say is that how I got the information of the meeting is that Lisa Clemens, she also has an organization called The Mother's Love, and she put out information that she wanted to have people come to participate in a committee where we will report to the Deputy Chief, Arthur Lee, the police officer, on ways to pick the new person to lead the 4th Precinct. And so she tagged a few members out of the community to attend the meeting. And this meeting that she scheduled was last Saturday at 2 p.m. at Pastor Heron's church. And so when she scheduled this meeting, she tagged myself and those who inquired about participating in this committee so that they could give their feedback to the deputy chief in response to the Christmas tree. People responded. So she tagged those people who responded and maybe those who responded to her via inbox or anything like that. And so that's how we got the information on this meeting, and this meeting I did attend. Now, I did not hear last week's show, as you mentioned, Don, about when Mr. Clark called in. I didn't hear last week's show, because I was getting myself prepared for the meeting that took place. And one thing that I found it's a meeting that took place at the church, but one thing that that led to the drama in the meeting is that I noticed that we had some people who were shot in our community at the liquor store. And there were three people shot, and then there was a young kid, a 14-year-old. And this area on Broadway and Lindale is a place that in the beginning of the summer, many community leaders, members, even, you know, raised concern about this area. And so, and there has also been a lot of crime in North Minneapolis, not just Broadway and Lindale, but as preparing for this meeting, I noticed that there was a rally that was taking place on Broadway and Lindale. And the people that were at the rally were actually members of the church where the meeting was being held. And so when I got prepared for that, I knew that we always talk in our community about bringing our community leaders together and a division that is part of the problem in our community as to why we cannot come and solve some of these problems because of the division within our leaders. I noticed that there was a divisive tactic being played. And so when I went into the meeting, I was prepared to hold people accountable for that. And when I went into the meeting, it was not to facilitate the community. It was a small meeting with the same faces that we know that are part of the problem, but they are self-appointed so-called leaders that keep up the division in our community. This is my opinion, but I keep that kind of to myself, but I am aware of a lot of people and the playmakers that divide our community. And so I went in questioning, where's the deputy chief? Because I'm expecting him to be here. We are reporting, is this meeting held by the city of Minneapolis? Who's conducting the meeting? And I'm here on behalf of my organization, and I want to make sure that we have confidentiality agreement, whatever's going on, because we have a lot of people that will steal your intellectual property at the table. So we want to be clear why we're here and why are the members of the church who are marching in the community, why are they not here? This is their church. This is a community event. And we're responding here to the tree, something that we decorated previously. So these were some of the frustrations I had, along with the buildup of community leaders only coming together when being reactive instead of being proactive. All those things that have accumulated, it builds a lot of frustration. We have a lot of issues that we need to tackle in our community. So this is something that I entered the community or the meeting with. I introduced myself. I was upset, of course, but I did make a statement that I'm not here to disrespect anyone, and I don't expect to be disrespected, but I was. And there was an individual in the room that was very tacky that over years have been disruptive in our meetings, that play a role in intimidating the women that come to the table. We have a history of people who will point out those who are at the table to see who could they maybe try and talk to or sleep with. And these things are things that we have in our community that's not being talked about. And these are part of the problem from many of our community leaders, and it needs to be dealt with. There needs to be more accountability held among our community leaders, and that's not being done. And that's where the drama came from. So I don't know how can someone say that I was sent there. The only time that I communicate with Ron and Don is when I'm calling in when you have the shows on the Wednesday or on a Saturday to speak my opinion on how I feel about what's taking place in my community. We don't have any side conversations about going into to the community. And I've never played my role in trying to go and disrupt anything, because I'm here on behalf of my community. And there's no division coming from me. I'm not going to use my body or my soul or anything that God sent me to this community to divide anyone in our community. It's working on behalf of the people. And so the drama that you guys are hearing is a bunch of the gossip that I don't engage in. And that's how it came onto Facebook. And I expect an apology from Mr. Jamar Nelson, because he wants to speak highly of me, but some things that he has said on as he was disrespecting me on Facebook after responding to the incident was very disrespectful and name calling. And I'm wondering where did that come from? And that's an example of the culture of people that call themselves leaders, that if you speak highly of me in public, you want to maintain that. Don't go behind me and associate with certain people. And then all of a sudden you have these certain names that you want to call me. We need to stop this kind of behavior in our community, stop people from picking and deciding on who is a leader in our community and appointing themselves as leaders. We need to stop that. And so whatever drama you guys heard, I don't know, because I'm not at the table when they're talking drama. I'm at the table when it's time to talk solutions. And that's my position.
Okay, and so with that said, you know, just to be very clear right here today on the show with 49 minutes and 20 seconds left of the show, we did not instruct you to go. Myself and Mr. Edwards did not instruct you to go to any meeting, and we had no knowledge of the meeting, and we were not there, correct?
That's very correct. So how would you even be aware of the – well, you were aware of the – made aware of the meeting through Jamar earlier in that day, but I didn't hear the show when Mr. Nelson announced it.
Yeah, there was no location given or time. There just was a he alluded to that there was a meeting later on that particular Saturday. So now, Ms. Dean, was there any mention in the group of any of the community activists that might run up with some problems with the Me Too movement because of their treatment of young ladies in the community that you wish to speak on or address at this point?
Well, one thing I do want to say is, as we are talking about the Me Too movement and women in leadership, I addressed this because I felt intimidated. I felt vulnerable when I was trying to speak on certain issues in the community, and I was being constantly interrupted. And this is a pattern by one of the individuals that was in the meeting that called themselves a community leader. And so and this behavior needs to be checked. And now that we have the Me Too movement out, it's all about respecting the woman, respecting them in many ways, not trying to intimidate them, name call, trying. We have this glass ceiling that we want to break. We want women in leadership positions. We had when we look at Ms. Nikema Levy Pound, when she was in her position, you know, we should have been talking about the Me Too then, because she was harassed for her leadership as a woman, you know, when people called her a monkey. And so since she looks like a gorilla and things like that. Those are things where when you call people names, that falls under the umbrella of the Me Too movement, when we talk about people who sit at the table and use their masculinity to intimidate women at the table. And as we can see in our community, every time it's too male dominated, and those are things that we need to address. When we address it with the council member, Congressman Keith Ellison, we have to address it with everyone that work in our community, politicians, community leaders, church members, church leaders. We want to hold everyone accountable under that umbrella. This is just something that's not happening to white people, or we want to politicize it. This is something that's really happening in our community, and the reason why we don't see a lot of women stepping forward in leadership positions because of this, because we have, you know, this vulnerability that takes place in our, you know, among our men in our community. And so, yeah, I raise that issue.
Okay. Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions for
me? Excuse me, Mr. Allen. I have a question. Appreciate it to Ms. Dean. This happened in an ecumenical facility at church, and Ms. Dean and others have been respectful enough not to name the church. But I'll ask the question this way. As things became somewhat testy and heated and et cetera, was the minister and the first lady of the church, were they there also in the room? And what leadership, because it is rumored that you were actually asked to leave the church and then a demand was placed upon you to get out of the church. I cannot believe that, but could you kind of clarify what was the role, or was the pastor there? Maybe he wasn't there. Maybe he and the first lady weren't there. What was the role of the minister if he was there, Ms. Dean?
The pastor was there. The pastor came, you know, was coming in and out of the meeting because the incident only took about 15 minutes. So the pastor was there in the inside, you know, running in and out. And so at you know, when there was an incident that took place in the meeting twice, as we all calmed down, and I was interrupted and actually verbally assaulted, and so that's when everything just felt threatened at that point. And so so I was asked to leave the church, and as I walked out the church, the pastor had went to get the first lady to bring the first lady. I didn't even know who the first lady was. She was not introduced as the first lady. I didn't even know who she was. And so as I walked out, the meeting room door was closed. And so I had said, well, I know the church. I know the history of the church. I know this is your father's church. And I was attacked after I said that. And the pastor and the first lady start screaming and yelling at me, saying, this is God's church. This is God's church. And you need to get out of here. And then called someone to ask them to escort me out. And as they were and they were screaming and yelling at me. And I was shocked that they were even offended, because this is your father's church. I mean, this is God's church, but this is your father's church. We know the history of the church. I know you. You know, I worked for the city of Minneapolis when you were there. So, I mean, I'm very well aware of people working in my community. And so as I said, this is God's church, screaming and yelling. And the first lady was screaming and yelling at me. And you're supposed to be humble. And so she put her nails in my face. And I think her nails are like stripper nails. And I was, and she looked like she was going to poke me. So I moved her hand out of my face. And so that's when they got like over agitated and kind of like as if she was trying to fight me. And then that's when people start coming out, storming out of the room. And I walked out the church. It's like, I'm not the one that's acting, misbehaving or anything like that. I'm being attacked by just saying, I know this is your father's church. I know the history of your father's church. So whatever was being said, I think I was, it was being said that I tried to attack the first lady. No, that's not true. And I believe that this brings to question the leadership of our church, because we have church members that were marching to try and deter people from coming to the meeting. And there was even an announcement in one of the videos saying that the community leaders should be here. When community leaders are there, they're preparing for the meeting at the church. And the leadership at the church, if there's anything, because when we have any kind of discussion like this, there's going to be a heated moment. So then you want to, as a leader of the church, you want to play a role, a humble role, and calming people down and be mature about that, because you have people coming from the community that's upset about what's going on in the community. So you should expect people to be upset and irate, and you should be able to know how to respond to that. We have people that is getting money funded under the umbrella of trauma to come and be able to identify when people in the community is fed up. So and that clearly was something that did not take place. So whatever rumor came outside of that is a rumor, and it needs to be clear, because I'm the one who was in there and a part of that. So, you know, I have a lot of respect, you know, for God, and that's what I want to say. But, you know, we do want to test God's people. We want to hold them accountable.
Yeah, let me ask two questions, and then I'm basically completed my examination, if you will. But it goes back to the postings and et cetera, and the attacks on you, and a lack of clarity about the statements that were made with regards to disrespect and, you know, the whole Me Too. But let me ask two specific questions. You mentioned that you were escorted out by security. So security had been brought in to control this meeting, I assume. Anybody that is asked to escort a human being and a Christian out of a Christian church certainly has been certified with security credentials. Okay, so
Well, no, this wasn't security. This was just someone in the meeting.
Somebody in the meeting?
This was not security. This was just. Yeah, he was asked. This is someone that was just standing there in the mess, and he just asked him to just walk me out of the church.
I see.
So it wasn't thing, nothing that question. Was.
Yeah, I understand. But this person certified to carry out a lawful extrication of a person? I mean, you know, what happens if the person has put their hands on you?
The person was not certified. The person was very respectful in what he was doing. And what he was doing was he was trying to calm the first lady down because the first lady was trying to attack me.
Okay.
That was what the security was doing.
Arthur Knight, who was identified as being the principal person, did he ever arrive? Did he ever come into the meeting?
Well, it appeared that the person who called people to the meeting, when I questioned, was he there? Why is he not there? And is this a meeting facilitated by the city of Minneapolis? There was an attempt to call him, I believe, several attempts to get him at the meeting. Because this is a meeting for the city of Minneapolis. We are deciding on whose leadership is going to be here at the 4th precinct. This is what we're doing in the community at this moment, or are we still not, are we not doing that anymore? And it was everything for TV.
Okay. I have one other question that I certainly must ask as it pertains to during the time that you were there. Now, after you left, I'm not sure what happened other than I understand allegations were made that Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards had masterminded this attack, which I'm so saddened by that those kinds of statements were made. But I understand that, you know, folks felt comfortable doing that. And I know that at some point Mr. Allen had a conversation with an individual knowledgeable about the meeting, present in the meeting, who maintained that both Mr. Allen and myself had been identified as agent provocateurs. And like I said, that's sad. I'm sorry that happened. Was there ever any discussion about the mistreatment of City Council member Jeremiah Ellison a couple of days before at the 4th precinct when he was denied entrance to the 4th precinct by the white assistant chief of the Minneapolis Police Department? Did that ever come up, Ms. Dean?
No, there was no discussion about any of the council members in this meeting.
Okay, all right, thank you.
While I was present.
All right, thank you, appreciate it.
And one thing, while I was present, the small time that I was present, there was no discussion. Maybe they talked about that afterwards. So have you heard any rumors about that? That came afterwards. And I want to keep in mind that this took place in a church, and so we all know that God knows your heart. So if you're being deceitful or doing anything like that in the church home, then God knows your heart. You're not fit to be a member, a leader of our community. So any gossip that comes out of a meeting that took place in a church is not mature. And so that's what I want to say.
In that context, Mr. have you asked for an apology from those in attendance?
Yeah, I asked God to. You know. No, I asked God for an apology. My responsibility is to the Lord because I know that this is a church home. We can't always trust the people that run the church, but we must respect God. So, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, then. Thank you.
And I sure would love to sit down with the first, and I definitely would like to sit down with the first lady in the pastor so that they can understand, because that's God's church. And I'm very much welcome back into that church. So I'm not barred from the church. That's God's house. So I'm definitely going to return back to that church. That's where my heart is.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, then. Okay. All right. Mr. Allen, anything else that we want to wrap it, or, you know, we've heard? By the way, the phone lines are open for any of those that were in the meeting. I understand there were 7 people in the meeting, 8 counting Ms. Dean. You know, our lines are open for clarification, rebuttal, or whatever else. So we just want to say that. We don't want to be accused of suppressing information or suppressing the truth. But go ahead, Ms. Allen. We want to wrap it.
I also want to make clear there was an individual in the room that was accused of that was being accused of wanting to attack me, and I was never threatened by this person. That person never posed a threat to me, or never ran up on me, or never did anything to make me feel as if I would have had to defend myself from this person. So, and that person was tagged in the conversation a lot, and that leads the public to believe that this person was going to attack me. And so I want to make sure that we clear up all the rumors, all of this falseness that's going on, and wherever it's leading or wherever people want others to think or to receive out of that message, I want to make sure that, you know, I pray for the people that do that. Thank you.
Right. right. All right. I want to thank you, Ms. Dean, Ms. Allen. We probably want to wrap it. I know we have some other callers waiting, and we have a call coming out of Missouri. So I want to thank Ms. Dean. Go ahead, Ms. Allen. Anything else?
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Dean, for calling. We appreciate it, giving us an update, and now we have it in recorded history in our archives on the Ron and Don Show that people have a problem, they can go listen to that, and it just tells the truth. Again, thank you for getting up with us this morning. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Ms. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Ms. Dean.
Are you?
Anybody holding? Any other calls, or what do we have, Mr. Allen?
No, sir. Our phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. Again, that number, phone lines open, 347-426-3904. There's one person in the queue, and
okay,
you and
so,
I, Mr. Edwards.
Folks are kind of enjoying the Christmas shopping or getting up late from last night. Let's do this then. Let's move into additional breaking news. Story in Minneapolis Star Tribune, Mr. Allen, probably in this morning's edition. It was online last night, probably in this morning's edition of the paper, in which members of the newly elected sheriff's office have been identified as being appointed to positions of responsibility. We want to identify a specific name that we were absolutely shocked when we saw that a former Minneapolis police officer by the name of Patrick King had been appointed as undersheriff and head of the investigative criminal investigative section of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department, and the new sheriff who defeated longtime Sheriff Richard Stanek, Republican, will be taking over that position sometime around, I don't know, 4th of January, whatever. But we would be remiss, as we have talked to some African-American police officers this evening, well, yesterday and this morning. I don't know what that is. That's some NSA thing I hear in the background. Okay, I thought that was cricket. So what has happened is that Patrick King was as I said, a former officer in the Minneapolis Police Department, transferred over to the Sheriff's Department about 2.5 years ago. This is an officer now in an important position of responsibility who in a court proceeding, and so this is for all the naysayers and et cetera. What we are about to reveal is in court documents, a trial that took place. It was called it was a bench trial, which meant that the judge presided. There was no jury. And in that trial, a number of people gave testimony. Then Chief Janae Harto, Deputy Chief Gerlicher, who talked in terms of criminal enterprises and et cetera that were being operated by Inspector Pat King of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office and et cetera. In the course of the conversation, the attorneys for Mr. King and Andrew Smith, Andy as they call him, gave testimony with regards to the corruption of African-American police officers, okay? Now, the Star Tribune had a reporter in the courtroom for 2 of the 3 days. Interesting enough, when that testimony came forward, the reporter for the Star Tribune did not show up. In fact, I asked him the next day why that was, said something about a doctor's appointment and et cetera. But during the course of the testimony, specifically of then Officer Patrick King, now an undersheriff in the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department, he referred by name, Don, to African-American officers as scumbags, saying that all of them should be in jail. Now, this included the following: current Chief Madera Arredondo, Commander Charles Adams, and now retired officers Lee Edwards, no relation, and Don Bannum, as an example. Now, during the testimony of then-Deputy Chief Gerlicher, they talked about a so-called stick-up in the city of Chicago, where these two individuals were allegedly robbed by African-American gunmen, and a large amount of money, which was assigned to the ATF. was taken, if you will. There were consequences, and the ATF agent here in this region who was involved in and trusted with that money and signed off on that money being given to the Minneapolis Police Department was transferred to some outpost down on the Mexican-New Mexico border, if you will. But I was shocked to see that Pat King, who also has a daughter who had a child by an African-American, and she was disowned. In fact, statements were made about a little NIG in their home, and Pat disavowed and disowned his daughter. And so I was trying to figure out what the heck is going on with regards to these continued attacks on African-American officers, if you will. And I repeat again, all of this information is in the files and the archives of the Hennepin County District Court. So just wanted to pass that out there. I don't expect anything to be done, Donald, but the public has a right to know, if you will. I mean, here are high-ranking sheriff's department supervisors, commanders, and et cetera, who have offered on the record, see, that's important, Don, on the record, their opinion of African-American police officers, some who hold some of the highest ranks in the Minneapolis Police Department. By the way, the reporter trial, but was the reporter in this story, is named David Chenin. David Chenin was a longtime operative for the Minneapolis Police Department and, in fact, played a significant role, get this, Don, in the destruction of the African-American Black Police Officers Association and writing a series of stories about corruption involving black officers and the theft of money, the sale of drugs, and et cetera. So that's what things are kind of coming to. You would like to think and like to hope that, you know, that community leaders that Ms. Dean was just talking about would step up to the plate and raise some questions to the new incoming sheriff, but I just don't know if that's going to happen. Yeah. Any questions? Phone lines are open. Do you have any questions, Ms. Allen? Don must be on the phone. You there, Don?
Yes, I'm right here. I was just looking in the archives, Mr. Edwards. I know in 2012, in the Spokesman Recorder, you wrote Sergeant Pat King should be minimally censored by celebrating.
That's what I wanted to happen. I'm sorry to cut you off. Please repeat that for all the naysayers. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, and Spokesman Recorder, Ron Edwards, 2012, the title of the story is Sergeant Pat King should be minimally censored, not celebrated. In the court transcript a couple months ago, I attended every day of that trial, as Mr. Edwards was talking. He slandered a significant number of well-respected officers as scum of the earth. Does this seem to align, my question, with which the new sheriff's values?
I know. I'm shocked. Again, that article written by the one of the co-hosts of this program in 2012, and no one raised the finger, if you will. Black officers were, I don't know, hogtied or whatever. The testimony in that trial that Mr. Edwards writes about in 2012 makes very interesting reading when you talk in terms of real corruption, if you will, and et cetera. Thank you, Mr. Allen, for going back into the archives, because I know you probably got some calls, people saying that Ron Edwards is going to have to prove that. Well, certainly did. 2012, way back in.
Hey, Mr. We have that call that we've been waiting on.
Okay, let's get it. Bring it in. Let's get it and bring it in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Caller 1914. You're live on the air with the Ron and Don Show. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Allen, Mr. Edwards.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve. Yes. What can we do for you this Saturday morning?
Oh, I was getting ready to ask you about that, about Pat King also, and I kind of knew that you had written an article some time ago about that.
Yes, sir.
But you were talking about the way that black officers have been treated. I think there's a, and we had talked about this previously, there's an underreported story out of St. Louis about four white police officers who were recently indicted for the beating of a black undercover officer.
What? we talked about. I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead, walk us through, and I have some questions for you on that. But go ahead, sir.
Okay, yeah, we had, there was a black undercover officer by the name of Luther Hall, a 22-year veteran of the force, who back in September, I believe it was 17th of 2017, was beaten by four white police officers, actually beaten by three of them. The fourth officer actually was part of the cover-up of the beating. But what took place was he was an undercover officer during a demonstration. So he was sort of implanted in the demonstration at the time. And the demonstration that was taking place was in downtown St. Louis. And it had to do, the demonstration was taking place because of a white police officer who had been acquitted, I believe, 2 days prior to that, to this demonstration, for the killing of a young African-American man. And there was some questions about the evidence in that case. And there was, right after the acquittal of the white officer, his name is Jason Shockley, the white officer, and the young man who was
Shockley. We talked about him on this program.
The young man who was killed was Anthony Smith, and there were some questions about the evidence. He was acquitted, I believe, on September 15th, and there was a series of demonstrations that took place for several days. But Luther Hall was in one of the crowds, in plain clothes, undercover, and was pulled out, as were a lot of people in the crowd, and beaten by police on the evening of the 17th of September of 2017. And these four officers didn't realize, I guess, that he was another police officer until sometime later, and then began to try to cover this incident up. But Mr. Officer Hall hasn't been able to return to work.
And you say this happened in 2015 or 2017?
No, 2017. The acquittal of the officer was September 15th of 2017. This demonstration took place 2 days later, where Mr. Hall was
Because you initially said 2015, and I know that our discussion, Officer Hall has gone through a number of major surgeries. In fact, we were discussing with your staff that he just had major back surgery here just a couple of months ago, a year after the situation. Who investigated this case? And tell us a little bit about the grand jury. You say the grand jury indicted four white police officers? I haven't seen anything on the national news. We've had the organization known as Black Star Communications here in the Twin Cities who do an excellent job. They have researched. There's not been a single line, if you will, in the Minneapolis or St. Paul newspapers on this. Only St. Louis. And primarily, for a while, the black newspaper there talked about this. Now, you say that four officers have been indicted, because we'll have people calling saying that it's still being investigated. Who investigated it? Was it, as I've been told, the FBI?
Yeah, this was the FBI that investigated. The FBI was called in. And I know that we also wanted to get these four officers' names out there.
Please put them out for the public record.
Yeah, the four officers are Dustin Boone, Randy Hayes, Christopher Myers, and the woman who was involved, her name was Bailey Coletta. She was not involved in the actual beating, but she was involved in the cover-up of the beating. So all four were indicted. They've been suspended without pay so far. And it's had repercussions also because now over 90 cases in St. Louis have had to be dismissed because these officers were involved in those cases. Right. Right.
90, sir? Are you saying
over 90 cases have been dismissed in St. Louis because these officers were involved. That's how bad this is. So.
And it is my understanding that basically 100% of the cases are African American.
Yes.
That have been dismissed.
Yes. Yeah.
And
oh,
I
my.
Understand that
oh,
three officers have been under suspicion as an outgrowth of an intelligence operation in East St. Louis, which is in Illinois, is a predominantly black police department, in which an African American was shot, killed, and burnt in his car across the Mississippi River. And apparently there were witnesses to the death of this African American, and these three officers that you have just named, not the female, but the three male white officers, were initially identified as being the officers involved in the death, the murder of this African American in his automobile on the banks of the Mississippi River just across from East St. Louis. And it was the East St. Louis Police Department that got the attention of the special agent in charge, who is black, of the FBI, to take this case up. Now, in conversation with your operatives and et cetera, we understand that how the feds got them. They intercepted telephone calls and confiscated text messages. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Our hearing, listening audience has a right to know.
Oh, yeah. Well, after the after this beating took place, this specific beating anyway, they were able to get text messages between a lot of these officers. And it was kind of interesting, specific to this particular beating, though. It became kind of apparent through their text messaging that they were anxious to go out there and beat up people in the crowd. Let me just ask this, Steve,
to cut in on this time. Was there, in fact, not text messages between these three officers, who we have reason to believe were also murderers, that they couldn't wait for nightfall? Could you just walk us through that one? Because your staff has examined that there in Missouri.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were waiting for nightfall. They said that they took off their name tags, so no one could identify them. And they said it'd be difficult for anybody to identify them at night. Well, unfortunately for them, they beat up the black police officer who was undercover, who recognized them. He recognized exactly who they were.
Them?
Yeah,
oh,
he recognized
God.
Them. Okay. Yeah, that was their downfall at that point. But there's plenty of actually in the indictment they put the text messages in the indictment also as part of the evidence. And then they also another thing that they did was they took Officer Hall's phone and destroyed it. To prevent any evidence, any audio or visual evidence of the crime they committed. So,
What has been the position of black elected officials in St. Louis, starting with the automatic councilmen and women? Has there been any? Because this has gone on for a little over a year now. Has anything been articulated by them?
Yeah. Well, actually, from the mayor on down, everybody I think in St. Louis has been there's the only person right now who has supported these officers in some way is Jeff Rorta, and I don't know if people remember his name. He's the head of the St. Louis police officer, right, and he's
natural Klansman, from out of the Ozarks. He's a dangerous white man.
Yeah, he's the only one right now who's had any support.
How did he justify it, sir? Could you walk us through that, Steve?
He was actually critical of the criticism that these police officers got, and said that right now his criticism was that everyone should just keep their mouth shut right now until all the evidence is in. Let's just wait for the trial and to be over with, and then we can criticize the officers. That's been
so he's hoping for an all-white jury in St. Louis County.
Yeah.
By the way, was this
yeah.
a federal or a state grand jury that indicted?
No, this was a federal. This was the
that's
district.
Where the FBI came
yeah.
in and the black
yeah.
agent and special agent in charge.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Anything from the Black Guardians, the Black Police Officers Association there in St. Louis? Anything from them that you can see?
No, I think the black officers basically are supporting the trial here and everything. That's the interesting thing too about St. Louis is that they have two separate police associations. And one is the Ethical Society of Police for black officers, and the other is the St. Louis Police Officers Association. Basically
under Rota.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the local Ku Klux Klan at the same time.
Oh, my God.
Has there been any reporting in closing? Has there been any reporting of conflict, physical or otherwise, between black and white officers in the station house? Or are they trying to suppress that?
No, they're probably trying to suppress. I haven't heard anything, but I can't imagine that there isn't some kind of tension there. After this, because this isn't. There's another story that took place about a year, maybe a little more prior to that, and I'd have to get all the particulars of that story. But of a white police officer who shot a black police officer in St. Louis. That's a whole different story there. But yeah, this is not the first time this is like taking place. But it was just the nature of this particular beating that was
Sir, we appreciate you calling with this information. We will be.
Yeah.
Leaning on you, if you will, in the coming weeks, because we're not going to let this go because it is a issue similar to Louisville and Robbins, Illinois, and Hoover, Alabama, and et cetera. I mean, if these situations are going on, God help us with regards to those stories that we're not able to get our hands on. But again, we want to thank you. We also want to thank your affiliate up here in Minneapolis, Black Star, for the roles they played with regards to some of these cold cases. God help us on the cold cases. A lot of black folks were shot in the head, left in the middle of the street. But again, Steve, we want to thank you from our corner here, and we'll be talking to you in the future.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, I'll hand it back to you if we've got anybody in the queue that may have any questions, if you will. Particularly in light of Ms. Dean's reflections and statements. Do we have anything, Don? What do we got?
No, we have no one in the queue. Nobody in the queue right now, and no one on hold. But our lines are wide open here, and I'm just checking something here on another computer because I pulled up a bunch of stories from the Pat King era, 2012, that you wrote. Let's see here. I post them on our page, so if people want to go back and look at that and read those, they could have an eyeful of knowledge.
Yes, they can. I appreciate both yourself and Steve taking the time to go back into the archives because I knew as I was talking to some individuals before we went on air about the situation with Pat King, with David Chenin, what's happening, the destruction of the Black Police Officers Association by the Star Tribune, by Chenin, by this group of white officers and et cetera, O'Rourke and others. But no one wanted to deal with the testimony, which is reflected in my 2012 article, in which I tell you, Andy Smith wasn't as harsh as Pat King, but Pat King talked about black police officers and black people like they were dogs. And I guess he felt comfortable with this older white judge who he totally misread. As I said before, in this particular matter in which King and Smith were suing the police and others, if you will, the assumption was that this good white judge of the fair of the day, he ruled against them, if you will, but at that point, Pat King was given a position in the Sheriff's Department by then Sheriff Richard Stanek. And lo and behold, yesterday the announcement made by the new Democratic incoming sheriff that Pat King would be the head of criminal investigations. And I got to tell you, a whole lot of Negroes are going to be going to jail. Yeah. Because the testimony of Gerlacher, this is for our listening audience and all those people can do the same thing that you and Steve and others did. Yeah, you can go to the websites, to the archives, and et cetera. Gerlacher's testimony was riveting. And just so people are absolutely clear, if you will, yours truly sat through every minute of that trial. In fact, what happened at one point after I wrote the article, the attorneys for Pat King and Andy Smith insisted that they be allowed to see the video, the courtroom video, to see how long that Negro Rod Edwards was actually in the courtroom. And I wanted to doggone this people you ever wanted to see. I never got up. I was there for every iota of testimony, if you will. And I'm telling you, Pat King, I say it again, talked about these black folks, but particularly his black comrades in arms. He talked about them like they had tails, man. And that included the current chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, Commander Charlie Adams, and et cetera. In fact, it was I that they called that night to tell them what had happened. But you see, the sergeant never. Oh, call. Go ahead. Get them, guys. Let's call.
Yeah, we'll call.
Come on in. Yeah, right.
Call 4616, last four. You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can hear you.
I'm calling about an article that was in the city pages about a politician by the name of Reagan. I believe it's Ray Dean. He's been on your show before, a politician that was running for office.
Well, yes. He was on the show before the election. Ray Dean, a three-term state representative. I'm very much aware of Ray Dean. I can't speak for Mr. Allen, per se, but Mr. Allen knows him and has talked to him. Yes, I understand that City Pages, which is a white publication, is calling attention to some of the past transgressions of Representative Ray Dean, including criminal activity, drugs, and et cetera. Is that what you're talking about, sir?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, well, it's not like the community, even before he got elected, 8 years ago, didn't know about it, but hey, word was sent out that he had been ordained to preside over this part of the plantation. And so that's what happened. You know, actually, a woman by the name of Lisa Delgado came close to defeating him. She lost by 311 votes. We talked about it briefly on this program. But I recognized many years ago that folks did not have the commitment, leaders particularly, to challenge what this individual brought to the table before his record was purged.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I also noticed too that your city is going to be named the best city in the world coming into the future of 2040. You're supposed to be progressive. You're leading in housing issues, but you're not doing too much about the racism and the police issues. I wonder, how is it that Minneapolis gets so much credit when credit is really not due?
We got a lot of money. We got a lot of money here.
Oh.
We got a lot of money. We can buy a lot of things. Just like, you know, we told stories about the Super Bowl. We're going to tell stories about the Final Four. In April, we're going to say that, in fact, I can tell you what the number is already. We're going to say that the Negro community got about $20 million from the Final Four. They got $45 million allegedly from the Super Bowl. So that's why, sir, I always say on this program that we're in the best of financial shape of any black community in America. You know, yeah. We've got all kinds of money to spend. Yeah. according to what our leaders tell us. We don't have any documentation to certify, to confirm, to edify, et cetera, but what we've got. And that's what's happening right now. We've got Christmas parties and things going on, man. Folks get to spending their elbows and drinking that good bourbon and on top of the line and get to talk about how great things are for the black community.
Uh-huh.
And we had a caller earlier this afternoon, this morning, if you will, who basically raised a question about the authenticity of the stories that are being told. You know what I mean? But, hey, but to your question about Raymond Dean, yes, it's a fact, you know, but the governor at that time, what was it, 13, 14 years ago, pardoned him, and later he became a representative for the legislative district here, District 59 or whatever. Yeah,
some of my friends were sitting down at the coffee shop, and they were just wondering, how is it that the gentleman lives in Congressman Keith Ellis's neighborhood, but he doesn't know any African Americans that needs a transformation in life?
I can't speak to that because on the occasion that Representative Dean was on this program just before the election in November, I have made a decision not to confront because of the statements that I've heard from people since he's been in the House of Representatives that, you know, he's good for us.
Oh. Is the black community, is they okay with him? Do they like him? Did they vote for him?
I can't speak for anybody other than myself, though I would maintain that the closeness of the race between he and the woman, Lisa Delgado, 311 votes, was the closest that he's had to face in his four elections. And so obviously the community was hearing something, but, you know, didn't enough black folk get out and vote their conscience? Oops.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
All right, take care.
Thank you for the call.
All right, Mr. Allen, we're getting ready to close it up, man. A lot of stuff. We want to appreciate and thank Ms. Dean, Mr. Allen, we need to do that, for coming on and clarifying. It looks like maybe we've been exonerated, that we were not the masterminds behind an attempt to. And I'm telling you what folks have been saying and what was said when Ms. Dean was put out of the meeting in the room, is that we are operating on behalf of the white nationalists and the Republicans, and so that we were trying to undermine Chief of Marrero Arredondo. Yeah, that's what people are saying.
Mm.
So I'm happy that Ms. Dean had the courage to come on the air and lay out the narrative. You know.
Well, that was nice of her. We appreciate that. Greatly appreciate that.
And we appreciate Steve out of Missouri. The story of an American hero, Luther Hall, needs to be told at around campfires and to black children in the scepter, buddy. Because it's what I'm hearing folks say, there are no black heroes. So, hey, that's what it is. How much time we got? Let my man.
Yeah, about a minute.
All
right.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. All right.
Back next week.
Merry Christmas,
everybody.
Kwanzaa, everybody. Yeah. God bless you. Black people.